In this episode of Backstories, I'm joined by my good friend, Mr. Mark Thieler, live from a forest somewhere in Dusseldorf. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
How are you today?
Good. Bit tired, but good. Always good.
You're always on the road, traveling around. Am I right in saying you're in a forest near Dusseldorf?
Yeah, it's true. It's a little forest. Not really a little forest. It's not like the Schwarzwald in South Germany. It's like in Dusseldorf, a little city called Krefeld next to Dusseldorf. And we have a little forest outside. Yeah, I can do a run every day if I want to in the forest. Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, you do have one of the most envy-inducing Instagram accounts that I do follow. With your nice weather and trees on a daily basis.
Trees and coffee,
exactly.
And sometimes a glass of gin, maybe.
Gin, beer, yes, all of that. So obviously we've name-checked you a few times on the Back to Front show, the man, the myth behind Beyond Telleran. But for those people who may not have had the pleasure of chatting with you or meeting you before, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of your history in the web industry or tech industry, if you like.
Sure. So yeah, I'm one of the older persons in the web industry, I think.
You and me both, sir. You and me both.
Yeah, true. And actually, I started on a machine way before the internet even existed, I think, and pixeling graphics and stuff, and was interested into computer graphics early. Not really into programming. That never was like my kind of stuff. I really enjoyed like the limitation you had on like a C64 back in the days, like with only 16 colors and like limitation of like how many pixels you can use, like per inch per pixel, actually. Yeah. And later I got into doing websites. That was like somewhere early 90s. When we used the IRC as communication tool for our C64 group still. I started running a forum together with a friend called Sasha Volta about Flash. And that got me back into the web industry, actually, after I did a apprenticeship in a print studio and a print agency, more print-heavy agency. And through that forum, we created an event that was called Flash Forum Conference, dealing mainly with topics around Flash, for like about 10 years before I decided to go full-time conference organizing. And with that, I created Beyond Telleran in 2010, actually, already. The first event ran in 2011. And I gave myself 3 years trying to make money with that full-time, meaning to make enough money to get food and house for my family. And it worked out, and I love doing it. And since then, I'm running this event only, like two times a year in Berlin and in Düsseldorf, 500 people each. Yeah.
Wow. So do you think, were you working up to the point of, during those 3 years, were you doing any kind of web development, or were you purely focused on really...
I set myself the goal of totally focusing on the event, to really like being there for the event, like 120%, and just focus really on doing it, to really do it properly. And I had saved a bit of money, so that I didn't have the issue that I have to do projects to subsidize my events, right? So that was working. Yeah.
So do you think your desire to go into events was formed during those bringing together of the people from the forum days?
Definitely, yes. When I made the decision, actually the reason for the decision is a pretty sad decision that I did. So in 2008 or 2007, I had an evening with my brother who was diagnosed cancer, and we had one of his conversations about life and how it is to end it, like to deal with the fact that he might die earlier, right? And he said like that every day is valuable for him now, and that he has to live every day as if it is the last day he has got. And I thought to myself, like, you know, like maybe I should sit down and really reflect my life and really see what I like most and what I do, because I loved what I was working with and for. Like, I had a great life. It was just like, try to find the one thing that you admire most in a year. And that was like the one conference I did for Flash Forum. And this actually the, I was always looking forward to that April conference and to meet the people again, to be the one like hosting that event, right? The kind of feeling to welcome everybody. And I just love it. It's really great. It's a great feeling.
So were you ever concerned that, I guess, the demise of Flash would put pay to the event? Was it a pretty easy transition to move into more? We'll talk about Beyond Telerand in detail shortly, because to me, it's not a pure web conference. It's way more than that. If my translation is correct, it does mean sort of beyond the edge of the plate. It goes beyond the sort of the outer circle of the industry that we work in. But I think was it an easy transition from the Flash kind of topics? Were you still looking at a lot of things around the industry as well?
Yeah, the concept was similar to the Beyond Telerand concept, actually, already there, because like only like the core topic was Flash, and we already had people speaking about how to write good text or typography or performance stuff or like agile development and stuff like this, right? So it was not only about Flash back then already, and I just took the concept and shifted the focus to the web industry and said like, okay. Based on what I'm interested in, because I never was interested only in one topic. I'm me looking left and right. I love type. I love film. All kind of that stuff that interests me. And therefore, I thought like I curate an event for myself and invite other people to watch what I created there. And it works out. Pretty easy, sounds right.
Well, I know. I mean, as I jokingly say, you only work 6 days a year, Mark, so it must be easy. But you're very much associated your persona, your personality with Beyond Telerand. Did you, in the Flash Forum days, was that something that you injected a lot of then? Was it on your own, or did you have a partner in crime, as it were?
Oh yeah, as mentioned, Dasha, he was the founder actually of the Flash Forum, because he's written the first German language book about Flash 4 back then, I think, and it hit the market really hard, so the people really bought a lot of people bought it, and he tried to find a channel with a forum to channel all the questions that were coming in for the book. And in 2001 we decided to do the first conference. Back then I was just helping him and not like really the creator or the brain behind it, but over the years it shifted and I got more and more into it, and I think 2005 or 6 our roles changed completely and I took over and he was just supporting me after that years.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah,
the perception is that events, how hard can they be, right? You know, you find a venue, you get, you book a few flights, you get some sponsors on board. But, if we can take you back to those first Flash Forum days, open the doors. What kind of hair-raising moments did you have in event organization back in the day? I'm assuming it all went perfectly well, but maybe there was something you could share.
In general, it did. Yeah, I'm lucky enough that I never had really like really hard issues or like problems that like in terms of venue or somebody died at your event or like somebody even broke a leg or something. Right,
where you've only like, broken your own, of course. But we
only my own. Yes. In the first days, you're never sure how you have to deal with, let's say, like ticket sales, for example. Yeah, you start ticket sales and it goes pretty slow, and then you go like, oh, will they all sell? What does it mean? Or it starts pretty quick and then it drops to nearly zero for a few months, and you wonder like, oh shit, what did I wrong? Do I have to do more advertisement? What is the matter? Like, what? How can I solve that? All that kind of stuff. Over the years, like doing that for 16 years now, you get way more calm on that and way more relaxed and think like, oh yeah, that's a pretty good number already. You know, we have such amount of number of month left, and therefore they will go. All that kind of stuff. That is like something that just needs some time and you to create some experience for you, right? So that you like get more experience and more known to all these kind of things. I think the most difficult stuff I had to deal with so far in all that that years was like finding the right venue. It's something that I think is really difficult, because I think the venue transports the vibe and the atmosphere you want to create for an event. So therefore that was always really important for me, and turned out really difficult every time I shifted the event to another venue, because we moved with the Flash Forum conference several times from Munich to Offenbach to Frankfurt to Düsseldorf to Cologne back to Düsseldorf. We did a tour through many cities, and that was something that was always really pain in the ass to find a venue that is not only reflecting your idea of the event, but also is not like super expensive, right? Because there's a lot of great events, event venues out there, but a lot of them are like very pricey. And if you want to keep the ticket prices low, that is like a point that's really, really important. Yeah. And obviously there's like things like speakers that drop out last minute or get sick, you know, that's like the stuff that you don't need. But over the years, you get relaxed also with this kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Did you find that, as I said earlier, you are very much the face of Beyond Telerand as well. People know you, they know the brand, and the two are very much joined. Did you find that a lot of the people that went to the Flash Forum events kind of migrated with you to Beyond Telerand? Did you have any problems building up that audience again? Because often, as we've seen recently, events that change names or they change focus, and the people behind them are still the same, but often the audience don't necessarily come across with them. Did you feel like you were starting from scratch again with Beyond Telerand?
Yes, I did, but I have to say, I think a lot of people, are not a lot, but like a core of people joined the Beyond Telerand conference and the idea as well, because I think with the Flash event, we already mixed topics, and the transition I did was like, I didn't like end the one and started the next one. I already did something called Play and Make, which I subtitled Beyond Telerand. And then I had like a transition to the Beyond Telerand theme and idea. And so therefore I think there have been quite some people like joining in from the old days. Definitely.
So that's interesting. So Play and Make was a transition event that you kind of introduce the Beyond Telerand brand into.
Exactly, yeah. It was kind of like where I try to like get a feeling for will people also take a new name in, like, will they accept it and will they go with me? So it worked out pretty well. I think in the first year Beyond Telerand was like 350 people, which is like not sold out. But it's more than half, like it's 500 people capacity. So I was quite satisfied. And really, actually, that only was possible because back then, every speaker that came to that event didn't ask for any money. So okay. I described them that I'm starting a new thing, and they just joined me for that. And that's like, great. I mean, some of them even didn't know me. I mean, some did, and they thought like, yeah, we're going to support you. But those who didn't know me, they just trusted me and what I said that... back then I wasn't even able to pay honorarium. Now that changed, luckily. But it's great that the first 2 years people agreed to get no or just a very low fee, right? So that's really great.
I think
to have this kind of support from the speakers, right?
I think you talked about venues earlier, and you're on record as saying I think the venue that you have in Düsseldorf is probably one of the favorites that I go to every year. Certainly as attendee, but also. With my you know work hat on, it's such a welcoming venue to be able to talk to attendees and things like that. Was it a simple decision to effectively do it in your hometown? I know obviously you've expanded to Berlin, but the first 3 years was just purely in Düsseldorf, right?
True. Yeah. Yeah. And that was like really, really good for me because all the things like going to the venue, checking things out, speaking to the venue people, the AV. All that kind of stuff was so much easier because it was like just 20 minutes away from my place, right? Mm. And that actually is something that with Berlin is actually quite difficult. Last week I had to go to Berlin just to check some workshop spaces. I had to take a flight or train to Berlin, which is like 600 kilometers from here. So it's like not that you can like easily go to Berlin, check something and go back to your house, right? Mm. And I couldn't even imagine running an event in New York or in San Francisco, like remotely. Mm. if I'm not able to control things, I think I would go crazy.
I think one of the things that, if you've never been to Beyond Telerand in Düsseldorf, particularly that strikes you the first time you go into the auditorium, which I believe is a theater, right? It's an old theater.
Yes. Yeah.
Is the way that the actual seating is arranged. There are some kind of traditional. I guess slightly bank seating to the back, but the majority of it is these beautiful little round cocktail tables with these funky little lamps, which has kind of become part of your brand as well. But was that something that you...
And that actually was also an accident.
Was that something that just kind of happened?
Yeah. back when I was living in Düsseldorf, one of my neighbors, Boris, he was the tech lead of the company that is driving the venue in Düsseldorf and in Berlin. And he when we had barbecue in my garden here in Krefeld, he got notice of the fact that I was looking for a new venue. And I was complaining, oh, everything is so expensive in Cologne and stuff. And he said, why don't you come to our venue in Düsseldorf? And I just knew the bigger theater in that building, which holds 1,100 people. And I thought, like, oh, no, that's way too big, right? Because 1,100 people are never going to get them. And he said, oh, no, we have a studio, a club. You can come and look at that. So I went there, came in. It was like construction light was on. There was completely empty room. And it was black floor, black walls, really bright construction light. And I was like, no, totally no atmosphere here. And he then said, like, oh, come back Sunday. I'm going to arrange the room in the way that I think you would like it. And he placed the tables there, the cabaret kind of style, right? Lighted everything in red and orange light and stuff. So made it really cozy. And I came back on Sunday and I was like, oh, actually, yeah, that's like great. And I mean, that's what I mean. Like a room on its own can be totally shitty, but what you can do is light and like furniture and stuff to create the atmosphere. That's really important. So never go and like go to a venue and like really decide on a daylight thing, but really check the venue in the kind of style and decoration that you want to have on your event and then decide. That was like really, it was an accident. And I somehow these lamps and tables turned into some kind of a branding asset of the event somehow, right?
Well, it's something that also that you you transposed to Berlin as well, because on the stage there's five or six, aren't there, where you can kind of sit around and have you given those back to the theatre yet, or did you...
Yeah, I always bring them every year. I thought, like, how do I make a like subtle connection to the other venue, because that venue is completely different. I mean, you can do a lot with light again, right? Like red light and the bluish light in between that to create like the same atmosphere light wise. But I thought, like, bring some of the tables. And again, that was an idea of Boris. He said, like, just bring some of the tables and place them on stage in front. And like, whoa. Like, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And it worked. The people who knew the Düsseldorf venue and followed to Berlin said, like, oh, that's funny that he brought the tables. And the new people who didn't know, they just thought, like, what a great idea to place tables and chairs on the stage, actually, around the speaker.
It's nice. So. It's a really nice touch. I think there were some people maybe who hadn't encountered the Düsseldorf event thought it was kind of just like reserved seating, maybe in the session. True. But then they realized that actually anyone could go and sit on it. And it was a great, great viewing and listening position. So, I mean, I think I know why I think Beyond Telleran's a, you know, a special event on the calendar. But what are the things that you think that make it I mean, you get a lot of repeat business, I know that, and you get a lot of people clamoring for your tickets. Why do you think people are so keen to come?
I think the main fact, first of all, for me, I don't know really. If I think, like, I go like, what is it what I'm doing that is like special, so I have no idea, really. I just do like everything I do, like, really. I mean, a lot of people say that, but I really mean it with a lot of passion. I really love running this event. And I think, or I hope, I will recognize if that someday is not the case anymore, then I should stop, right? Because I think that's the core secret. But I think what people like, what I hear from quotes that I have on my webpage as well, is that they love the friendliness, the warm and very welcoming atmosphere at the event. Not by me or by the speakers, more by the people coming to the event. They are really like welcoming and really open to everybody. And the conversations in the breaks is the core, the juice that they really, that the event makes the event, and not just the talks, right?
I think what struck me first, obviously, the events in Germany, but all the talks were in English. Did that ever worry you that you weren't catering to the German language audience having an event in Düsseldorf or Berlin, for that matter?
No, I don't. That never really. It's like two decisions to do that. A, it's the number of speakers you can get if you do it in English, because it's international. You can get them from all over the world. B, I'm not only targeting the German audience as my attendees, but the Netherlands, Belgium, France, UK. It's all really close to Düsseldorf and to fly in.
Yeah.
And I think I would be stupid to just do it in German, really. I would exclude so many people from being able to come to the event if I'd run it in Germany.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Düsseldorf, I think, is a couple of hours from the Netherlands on the train. I've done that journey. It's about an hour and 10 minutes from most UK airports. Mm-hmm. Super, super close. Yeah, I mean, what do you think in this day and age where we can, you know, we're talking through Skype, we're looking at each other, you know, we do most of our business online, our banking, our flight arranging, whatever it is, why do you think it's so important to get, you know, people in a room who probably converse online on a daily basis? What is it that brings people together? Why is it so essential, do you think?
Just yesterday, Vitaly and Marcus from Smashy Magazine and I had the conversation as well. And we found out that we were so productive in the evening when we just sat down, had a drink, and emptied our heads above a piece of paper where we just dropped every idea we had on a piece of paper, right? So in the same counts there. Like, I think nothing can really replace meeting people in real life. I mean, we both chat online. We see each other, but it still is different than like having a barbecue in my garden or like meeting for dinner or for a beer or whatever, you know, like all that kind of stuff. I think that is something that is so valuable and that is something I am so thankful for. Every time I finish an event or come from an event and when I took my dog for a walk, who sadly died at the beginning of the year in the forest, I was thanking whomever for being in that position, right? To be able to meet people in real life all over the world and make business, have great friends, have conversations that are really inspirational. I think for me, that is like really important. And if I imagine, even though not running, let's say I wouldn't run the conference, I'd do like project work and would sit as a freelancer in my office day by day, year by year, month by month, and never meet other people. That wouldn't work. Even though I would be able to chat to people on Skype or Slack or Basecamp or whatever, I think it's really important. And you can project to so many areas and fields of business. Let's say finding new speakers, an email, a phone call. No, I mean, yeah, it could work, but meeting a person, I can guarantee you that like 90% or 95% of the people you meet and talk to face will say, yes, I'm coming, because then they can feel and see how you are, right? Same with like possible partners or sponsors, right? Everything like this, or even like the caterer at an event. If you go to the caterer and meet them in person and you go like, I need that cheaper. If you write an email and say like, I need a discount, they go like, no. If you see them face to face and look into their eyes, like they go like, okay, yeah, maybe. And they understand your idea, right? And the same accounts for like events. If people meet there sometimes once a year or maybe like really just a few times a year, and then they come to Düsseldorf or Berlin and meet there, and they go like, hey, you remember last year when we were here, we were at that like kind of bar, and all that kind of experience is not just like, it's not just leisure and not just like fun, and it's also business, really. It belongs to the part of the business that we do nowadays. I think. I mean, we're obviously quite fortunate to be in that position.
Of course, yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Do you find it's got easier now in sort of year six of Telerand when you approach a speaker? Are they all jumping at the opportunity compared to 5 years ago?
I think if it comes to name and like the reputation, yes. But like to find like different people, because I set myself the target not to have people coming back too often in a certain time frame, right? So I think 2 or 3 years is okay, because then they have different topics again. But yeah, finding new speakers and stuff, that's difficult. Having them to agree to come, or convincing them to come, that got easier over time. Yeah, definitely.
I'm sure that's the case. One of the things I'm keen to sort of explore in these interviews really is kind of lessons learned. As I said to you before we hit record, I think people perceive the web industry, maybe this is just my perception, that it's a lot around code, it's a lot around design and UX, but I think it's a huge industry at heart. There's so many things that go on around it, and events is obviously one that we've both been involved in for a number of years. in various capacities. And so, you know, we've all learned lessons along the way. And, you know, it's a classic cliched question, what's some of the biggest lessons that you've learned? But, you know, if people are wanting to get into the web industry or the design tech kind of industry as well, I'd like, to, you know, people that I chat to share some of those learnings. So, you know, what are some of the big lessons that you've learned? I guess running events, really, if people are thinking of that's an area that they might like to go in, or just anything in general.
Yeah, that's a tough question, actually. Lessons learned. I mean, you learn every day, and like, it's just, I think an important thing I learned, really, which I knew before, but which I always get proved when I think about it again, is to be completely honest about what you do, and open. Because when I was at ConfCon, for example, where we met in Bristol, I had a conversation with a few people, and I invited them to come to my event because they were organizing an event in the Netherlands. And I said, I could get a free pass. And they go like, oh, I mean, we are your competition, right? So why do you give us free tickets? I said, like, because we learn from each other, right? I mean, where should we learn from each of stuff that about the stuff that we do if we don't attend other events, for example, and meet new people there? So I think that's a really big lesson I learned. So be just open, and don't try to hide or to cover your things and make a secret, like to go like, oh no, I don't tell you how that works. I think that's the most important thing I learned so far.
That's really interesting. You come across that a lot, don't you? People wanting to keep things with software or designs and.
Even speakers. Yeah. I mean, I really heard the sentence once from a person saying, like, you want to steal my speakers.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about that sentence for a second.
Ownership. Yeah. It's is one thing, you know, you can share and be open, but not everyone's going to steal your idea or indeed have the ability to replicate it even 50%. So, yeah. And shared learning. I think that's a great lesson and something we all do all the time, of course. Just before we turn to my silly little quickfire five questions for you, why don't you just let people know where they can find out more about Beyond Telerand and yourself online?
Okay, it's just actually two websites. One is like markthiele.com. I don't know if you do links.
Of course,
show notes.
We'll put those in.
And the other one is beyondtelerand.com. That's like the two websites I maintain and where I blog and write about the events.
You've recently put quite a few articles on the Beyond Telerand site around the event, your thinking behind it, the kind of the experience that you try and in my opinion do succeed in doing as well. So if you are interested in attending, I go to both every year, very lucky. I'm a little upset I haven't got the full set though. I think I missed the first three or two Dusseldorf events, but hopefully made up for that with the others. But I thought it'd be a bit of fun to round off with a five questions that I'll ask everyone that I chat with, call my quickfire five. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
This may get get dropped by interview two. But my first question to you, Mark, is then, are you an inbox zero or an inbox overload kind of guy?
Inbox zero.
Really?
I hate the batch on my inbox.
How do you do that?
Just like I all these emails that usually keep unread because you want to do that later, I put them in my things, like my to-do list, and give them a date to get back to it and check that later. Oh. I can't do like the inbox full with like, I've seen Vitaly's yesterday, Vitaly Friedman's inbox, and it was like a nightmare.
I'm sure like Apple haven't accounted for the badge on the iPhone for how many emails that Vitaly probably has in his inbox. It's like, you know, it's a UX issue. Okay, yeah. What's the one app you can't live without?
The one app? The one app that I can't live without? Quick. I think it is my email program.
It's a good choice. Good choice.
Simple. Easy.
Here's the toughest one for you. I know you're a fan of the caffeine. Espresso, macchiato, flat white, or something else?
Flat white.
Really?
Yeah, I like flat white.
And what's the most useful piece of kit in your everyday bag, in your tool bag?
The battery pack, the power pack I've got to recharge my phone because these things die way too early.
What are you using these days? Have you got one of the super big iPhones? I can't remember.
Yeah, I got one of the iPhone 6, not the plus one, not the big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. 6S it is, I think it's called, right?
Mine's about 4 years old. Yeah. And
I mean, I left my house yesterday at 5 in the morning and it was empty by 11. So like, no battery.
They are the Beyond Telerand branded battery packs, right? Or do you have a bigger one?
Exactly.
Like industrial size?
Yeah, I have.
And what are you going to do right off this interview?
Get another coffee.
I thought you'd say that. Well, Mark, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I look forward to catching up with you in person at an event soon, no doubt. And of course, all the links that Mark has mentioned there will be in the show notes. And as always, thank you for listening. We'll be back soon. Cheers.
Bye-bye.